The Chinese strategy in this trade war has changed significantly in the last few weeks.
That former government trade official explains what he says might be a much harder line from China. It's Thursday, May 30th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You're part of this program. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, Huawei takes the U.S. to court in the U.S. The man who heads the Pentagon names the country that is his biggest concern. And people are being asked not to use too much of the water in Australia's biggest city. It is all on today's VOA Asia. Don't say we didn't warn you. That phrase is contained in a commentary in the Chinese Communist Party newspaper, The People's Daily. The commentary is headlined, United States Don't Underestimate China's Ability to Strike Back. The U.S. business news channel CNBC reports that phrase, don't say we didn't warn you, has only been used twice in the history of the People's Daily, in 1962 before China's war with India, and in 1979 just before the outbreak of war between China and Vietnam. But many think instead of military action, this time China appears to be talking about the growing possibility of them blocking shipments of rare earth materials to the United States. As we explained in yesterday's program, rare earths are materials necessary in the manufacture of many items from mobile phones to electric car batteries. To talk more about this, we welcome to VOA Asia via Skype Jeff Moon, a China trade and government affairs consultant and the trade representative to China in the administration of former U.S. President Barack Obama. Jeff, just how significant is the use of that phrase, don't say we didn't warn you, in the People's Daily?
Well, I think this is being communicated by the Chinese government to express the seriousness of the situation. They've only used that phrase a couple times prior to previous wars. And the fact that they want foreign audiences to know that those are the situations when that phrase has been used is also significant. But if you step back a second, the Chinese strategy in this trade war has changed significantly in the last few weeks. President Trump announced an increase in the tariffs on May the 5th. Prior to that, China only responded to the tariffs that President Trump imposed, as in he imposed tariffs, they then imposed tariffs of their own. Now they're moving from a reactive strategy to a much more proactive strategy, and they're taking out the playbook that they have used many times in the past to intimidate and retaliate against other countries. And the playbook consists of first declaring that China is somehow the victim in the dispute, which I think is kind of interesting because China is running a $350 billion trade surplus in this situation. It's hardly a victim. Then trying to express outrage through the state media in order to whip up nationalism and defend Chinese dignity. And then the playbook includes making threats, which has already been done. After that, there's action. So I see this latest statement as a final declaration that now we are going to be taking action in the future, and we'll just have to wait to see what that is.
What could that be? What are they able to do? How far do you think they might go?
Well, the threat that they have made most obviously and most recently is to embargo rare earth metals that all countries that produce electronics need. China has 90-some percent of the world's supply, and they have talked about embargoing it. They had did that with Japan in 2010. Japan sued at the World Trade Organization. China lost the case, but there is a history of China doing that. Down the road, if you look at history, not only do you have responses like this, but China's playbook includes boycotts of iconic firms or boycotts on a much broader basis against American products in general. There can be popular protests. There have even been violence in the past. I'm not saying that's where we're going, but it's not hard to find many cases where China has played things out here. I think this is a huge mistake, because China's greatest interest is really preserving the status quo of that $350 billion trade surplus. And by doing this, they're going down a road that is going to alter things permanently. And it's going to be very hard to get back to where that status quo was to begin with.
You are a former trade representative under the Obama administration, or in the Obama administration. Where would you put China's position as it stands now as far as trade is concerned?
Well, China, when it came into the WTO, promised to become, to move from being a state-led economy to being a market-led economy. And just last Saturday, there was an authoritative statement in the in Xinhua, the state press of China, basically saying that the industrial policies, the state-led industrial policies that are most of concern to the United States are now off-limits. They're not negotiable. They are, quote, core interests, which are buzzwords that China uses to cover interests like Taiwan, that they signal that those are the most important things to them. If that is the case, if China is really saying that it is going to remain a state-led economy, it is going to continue to subsidize its goods, sell them at below cost overseas, bankrupt foreign firms, and thereby capture markets, then we have a very serious problem in our trading system that's going to need to be rectified. And this trading dispute, if it's required to rectify that situation, then it's well worth getting into that kind of a dispute. I really think we need to get clarification on what China means, because if it really does mean that they can take actions like that as a matter of sovereign policy, then we have a major breakdown in our system. And China has basically renounced its obligations under WTO.
Well, how does that factor into the Trump tariffs? Have they worked? Are they working? Do you think it was the right thing to do?
Well, I think the Trump tariffs have at least got the attention of the Chinese. We had 30 years of year-round discussions under what was called the Joint Commission on Commerce and Trade with China. And the reason that didn't produce results was that there was no teeth to the process. There were no negative consequences if either China wasn't forthcoming in the reforms that it said it wanted to undertake, or if it didn't perform under the obligations that it accepted. So tariffs are a mechanism to have some kind of accountability. Having said that, tariffs are not the best mechanism because they just inflict pain on both sides, and American consumers are paying the cost of all of this. So I wish there were another way, but at a minimum, we do have China's full attention on the trade concerns that are really at the heart of this dispute.
Jeff, I want to talk to you about the Huawei dispute and Huawei going to court in the United States. Can you hold on past this little break we have coming up?
Sure.
These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Nepal commemorated the anniversary of the first ascent of Mount Everest amid a climbing season marred by the highest death toll in 4 years. A prominent former student leader of the 1989 pro-democracy protest in China's Tiananmen Square said Western countries need to press China's ruling Communist Party to improve human rights. Japan is providing $1.2 billion in aid to Bangladesh for infrastructure projects. That announcement came as Bangladeshi Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina met with Japanese counterpart Shinzo Abe in Tokyo. International and domestic watchdogs are denouncing the arrest in Pakistan of a journalist for reporting on demonstrations of activists linked to a local ethnic Pashtun rights movement. This is VOA Asia. Huawei, one of the world's largest telecommunication equipment manufacturers, is a Chinese company that has basically been blacklisted by the Trump administration. They have gone to court in the United States. Jeff Moon remains with us. What are they doing here? Why are they going to court in the United States?
Well, I think this is mainly a chance for them to draw up attention, public attention to this situation. It doesn't seem to me very likely that they're going to win the case because they're asking for what's called summary judgment. Summary judgment is a motion that you make in a legal case when the law is very clear and there are absolutely no facts that are in dispute. Well, there are facts in dispute regarding the security situation with regard to Huawei. So I would be very surprised if they were able to achieve summary judgment. Ironically, though, what's also interesting to me is that Huawei is using rights, legal rights in the Western system here in the United States that no foreign company has in China. There's no ability of foreign companies to go sue in court against the Chinese government or to even appeal that when they have been banned from the China market. And there are many American companies that have been banned. So there are a lot of ironies in this situation. And as I said, I think it's mostly about publicity.
So you don't expect them to be successful, at least in that Texas courtroom. And if they are not, can they appeal?
I do not think they will be successful. Yes, under the American legal system, they probably could appeal. I don't think they'll succeed in that either. The way to resolve this is to get together, for the two governments to get together and start talking again about resolving the outstanding disputes in this trade war and matters involving Huawei as well.
Do you see an end to this trade war?
Yes. The United States and China have, for ever since relations resumed 30 years ago or so, have had many different disputes that have been very difficult to overcome. Think Tiananmen and other things. And we have always been able to resolve our disputes. So I think that we will be able to resolve this dispute. It's now looking like it's going to take longer rather than sooner in order to get there. We have, there's a big complicating factor. We have a very unconventional president who doesn't operate according to the usual procedures that we use to get to an agreement. But ultimately, it's in the interest of both countries to reach an agreement. The economies are much more interdependent than both countries publicly are stating that they are. And I think that for the time being, both of the governments are overestimating their strength and underestimating their weakness. And it may take a little bit of time for that reality to sink in before we actually do get to an agreement.
Jeff, I thank you so much for being with us, and hopefully we can speak again soon.
Sure, my pleasure.
Happening now in Asia, Amnesty International is accusing Myanmar's military of committing new atrocities in northwestern Rakhine State, where it conducted a brutal crackdown against Rohingya Muslims less than 2 years ago. The military says the report has deployed thousands of troops to Rakhine to battle the Arakan Army rebel group, which is seeking greater autonomy for the state's ethnic Buddhists. Stay up to date with VOA. Acting U.S. Secretary of Defense Pat Shanahan is in the Asian Pacific region this week, a trip that comes as tensions with Iran are on the rise. But VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb, who is traveling with the secretary, reports a different rivalry is Shanahan's top concern.
A growing threat in the Middle East. New missile testing from North Korea. But Acting Secretary of Defense Pat Shanahan says China remains his biggest concern.
Implementation of the National Defense Strategy is my top priority. China is the priority within the National Defense Strategy.
Shanahan's Asia-Pacific tour includes stops in Hawaii and Indonesia before the annual Shangri-La Defense Forum in Singapore, where he is expected to meet with the Chinese defense minister. The two countries are deeply entrenched in a trade war as their militaries vie for influence in the region. Bradley Bowman is with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies.
The term near peer competitor is used with China. I think that term is quickly becoming outdated. In many areas, China now has capabilities that are as good as ours or better.
And Michael O'Hanlon, a defense expert with the Brookings Institution, says that military power continues to grow.
A big part of what's happened is that China now has a big enough military budget of its own and good enough high technology, especially in areas of electronics and robotics and maybe certain kinds of missiles, that it can essentially be very competitive in the Western Pacific especially.
Shanahan's trip comes on the heels of recent decisions to reinforce U.S. defenses in the Middle East to protect American forces from potential attacks from Iran. O'Hanlon says the move signals that the U.S. is not just focused on China and Russia, but officials worry the decision to send troops there further entangles the U.S. in the Middle East, just months after some forces were withdrawn. Carla Babb, VOA News, Jakarta.
Coming up, in Australia's biggest city used too much of the water, and it'll cost you. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
latest news from VOA Asia, police in Bangladesh filed charges Wednesday against 16 people in connection with the burning death of a teenage girl who made sexual harassment allegations against her school principal. 19-year-old Nusrat Jahan Rafi was soaked with kerosene and set ablaze on the rooftop of her school on April 6th, just days after filing her complaint against the principal. This is VOA Asia. Water restrictions are to be imposed in Sydney, Australia's biggest city, for the first time in almost a decade because of falling reservoir levels and a long-standing drought. Residents who breach the regulations could be fined $150. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has more.
The flow of rainwater into some of Sydney's reservoirs is at its lowest since the Second World War. From Saturday, households will face restrictions that will target the use of water outdoors. Garden sprinklers will be banned and tougher measures could follow. The New South Wales state government says that early and decisive action will help to conserve supplies as a record-breaking drought worsens. Australia's Bureau of Meteorology is predicting below-average rainfall and higher temperatures for the next 3 months across much of the continent. The New South Wales State Minister for Water is Melinda Pavey.
With the lowest inflows into Sydney's water storages since 1940, the government's come to a decision that it is best to go into water restrictions. We may get rain. The Bureau of Meteorology's predictions aren't fabulous, but as we know, as we plan weekends, they're not always right, and I hope that they are wrong. We are taking the appropriate course of action to take it to level one.
New South Wales has been in drought since the middle of 2017. Catherine Port from Sydney Water, a government-owned company, says its officers will patrol to ensure the water ban isn't broken.
Sydney Water have a team of community water officers that will be out in the community to monitor and ensure that water restrictions are complied with. Penalties that will apply is $220 for individuals and $550 for businesses.
Critics, though, insist that Sydney's plight is in part the result of poor planning and a failure to take water recycling seriously. Falling reservoir levels prompted authorities to switch on a multi-million dollar desalination plant in January. At full capacity, it could supply Sydney, a city of 4.6 million people, with 15% of its water needs. Smaller towns in New South Wales, Australia's most populous state, are also facing water crises. In Tamworth, residents are on level 4 restrictions that ban all use of water outdoors, and swimming pools can't be filled or topped up. Level 5 restrictions are considered to be an emergency measure. Australia is the world's driest inhabited continent. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This news from VOA Asia. The U.S. Defense Department has submitted a report to Congress on rare earth minerals as it looks to reduce American reliance on China amid mounting concern in Washington about Beijing's role as a supplier. Remember, all the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. In Washington Wednesday, Special Counsel Robert Mueller made his first public statement on the investigation of Russian interference in the United States 2016 election. The statement comes amid demands from Mueller to testify on Capitol Hill about his findings and tension with Attorney General William Barr over the handling of his report.
Now, I have not spoken publicly during our investigation. I'm speaking out today because our investigation is complete. The Attorney General has made the report on our investigation largely public. We are formally closing the Special Counsel's office, and as well, I'm resigning from the Department of Justice to return to private life.
Mueller said his appointment of special counsel was charged with looking into interference in the 2016 presidential election. He said, as alleged by a grand jury indictment, Russian intelligence officers who were part of the Russian military launched a concerted attack on the U.S. political system. The indictment alleges that they used sophisticated cyber techniques to hack into computers and networks used by the Clinton campaign and stole private information, and then released that information through fake online identities and through the organization WikiLeaks. He said the releases were designed and timed to interfere with the U.S. election and to damage a presidential candidate. What many have focused on is the report's second volume.
The order appointing me special counsel authorized us to investigate actions that could obstruct the investigation. And we conducted that investigation, and we kept the office of the acting attorney general apprised of the progress of our work. And as set forth in the report, after that investigation, if we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. We did not, however, make a determination as to whether the president did commit a crime. The introduction to the volume 2 of our report explains that decision. It explains that under long-standing department policy, a president cannot be charged with a federal crime while he is in office.
Mueller added this clarification of long-standing guidelines about charging a sitting president.
The Constitution requires a process other than the criminal justice system to formally accuse a sitting president of wrongdoing. And beyond department policy, we were guided by principles of fairness. It would be unfair to potentially accuse somebody of a crime when there can be no court resolution of the actual charge.
Mueller said that if he were to testify before Congress about his work as special counsel, he would limit his testimony to the research contained in the report.
It contains our findings and analysis and the reasons for the decisions we made. We chose those words carefully, and the work speaks for itself.
White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders released the statement shortly after Mueller completed his remarks. It read in part, "The special counsel has completed the investigation, closed his office, and has closed the case." Mr. Mueller explicitly said that he has nothing to add beyond the report and therefore does not plan to testify before Congress. After 2 years, the special counsel is moving on with his life, and everyone else should do the same. That is what Sarah Sanders said. This is VOA Asia.
This is Science in a Minute.
A pair of scientists from Kansas suggest in a new study that a nearby star explosion may have played a role in forcing modern human ancestors to walk on 2 feet. The study suggests a supernova may have bombarded Earth 2.6 million years ago with so much cosmic radiation that it flooded the lower atmosphere with electrons. The researchers suggest this surge in atmospheric ionization set off a huge increase in cloud-to-ground lightning strikes that set off forest fires around the world. It's thought the fires forced human ancestors, who were accustomed to climbing and living in trees, out of the forests and onto grassy and open savannas. The researchers propose that our ancient relatives were then forced to walk across the grasslands, but to look out for predators, had to learn to walk upright on 2 feet. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Another domestic story for you from the United States, and that is that Americans have long felt the call to go west, but they're also now heading south. Between July of 2017 and July of 2018, more people relocated to counties in the west and south of the United States than moved out, that according to the U.S. Census Bureau. Overall, suburbs in the south and west welcome more people than counties in the Midwest and the Northeast. Texas is particularly popular. 4 counties in the Lone Star State are in the top 10 spots. They include Harris, just outside of Houston, Collin, about 64 kilometers from Dallas, Tarrant, outside of Fort Worth, and Behar, near San Antonio. That's going to wrap up our program for this day. You've been listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia, get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Find us at boanews.com and let's hear from you at BOA Asia Facebook and our email at boaasia@boanews.com. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Nelson Lopes, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our BOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.